Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. JC, my guy, it's time for you to give some love to a player with the BC Lions that you have been ripping on. I believe you called for this guy to be cut as well. Aiden Eberhardt, man. Give this guy some flowers.
I don't know that I ever called for him to be cut, but I did question whether he was going to be a viable long-term starting CFL receiver. And frankly, he's proven me wrong, right? I thought he has been, I think he has been excellent this year when he's been called upon. His target volume is not exceptional by any stretch of the imagination, but when they throw the ball to him, he makes impactful plays. So hats off to Aiden Eberhardt. He's proven me wrong. He has captured a part of my Eberhardt now. So I hope he sticks around.
Well done. Well done.
Breaking news, everybody. For those that like to hate JC Abbott out there, I knew he had it in him, but he's man enough to admit when he's made a mistake. We can do that at 3downnation.com. The fellas ain't scared to go out on a limb, especially you two, I'll say, and even JC, you go farther out than John Hodge and I do, to have a take, but you were wrong about him. You ate it. Good on you, bro.
And to be perfectly frank, if none of us had opinions about anything, we should probably all go do other jobs. So having opinions is a good thing.
Definitely. And he took, like, he ate his mistake and didn't even leave any food for later in that mustache that he walks around with.
I'll say this. I had the exact same opinion on Aiden Eberhardt. I didn't know why he was out there back in 2023. I thought he struggled at times last year, but I too have been very impressed with what he has done. It does help when you've got Nathan Rourke throwing you the football and you're not bouncing between starters every week. Like, last season was a bit chaotic last year for the BC Lions with VA in and out and injured, Nathan Rourke coming back, rusty, blah, 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 all that stuff. So having one consistent quarterback, I think, is helpful for everybody. But Eberhardt, yeah, he has more than earned his spot in the lineup. That's for sure.
My rule of thumb is always, I'm going to be a harsh critic, but I'm going to be equally as effusive in my praise. So when you're doing well, I'm not afraid to say I was wrong. I make mistakes all the time. It's part of being human. It's part of having every single thing that you say about this league being out there as public knowledge. I'm sure there's a lot of people, like Hodge mentioned, who had the same opinion internally who don't necessarily have it out there in print. And it's my job, when a player does prove me wrong, to put that out there in print as well and to indicate that, hey, I make a mistake here and this guy is playing some damn good football, as is the case with Mr. Eberhardt.
Bro, what are you talking about? The players don't watch or read or listen to anything.
Oh, never. Never.
Never, ever.
Couldn't imagine them doing that.
Let's get to it, boys. We're discussing the Edmonton Elks climbing their way out of the basement in the Three Down Nation Power Rankings.
The Montreal Alouettes moving to a new starting quarterback.
The race for third place in the West Division.
Canadian quarterback Taylor Elgersma. For the people that need to know out there, it's Elgersma, not Elgersma. Taylor Elgersma getting his first NFL preseason action. And I got some notes for Kevin Harlan later, but we'll save it till our segment.
And McGill University unveiling a new logo. But first, Ryan Dinwiddie ripped his own team after the Argos 46-42 loss to the Ottawa Redblacks, saying, quote, "I don't think those guys quit on us, but I think we've got some pretenders in the building that like to talk a big game and don't show up on game day," close quote. He also added, quote, "We just don't have enough dogs, man," close quote. This isn't the first time Dinwiddie has publicly criticized his team this season. Did Toronto's players deserve it? And do you think they'll respond this week against the Elks?
I do think Toronto's players have deserved it to an extent, and Ryan Dinwiddie has earned the right to criticize his team. He's done it once before this season. It resulted in a win the very next week. I think he can light a fire under some people, but I did take issue with some of his comments after this game because they didn't come across necessarily like just a coach criticizing poor performance. Some of them seemed almost mean-spirited in nature. And I don't necessarily know that that was Ryan Dinwiddie's intention. I'm sure he was frustrated after another disappointing loss. But I'll point specifically to the things he said about the offensive line, because that offensive line has struggled this season. At times, you could even say they've been putrid. This was not one of those games, right? Nick Arbuckle's jersey was clean. There was no sacks allowed. There wasn't even really noticeable pressure on the quarterback. I thought they accomplished what they set out there to do. And even in the run game, yeah, it wasn't a great performance. We only gave Deontay McMahon 6 carries, and he averaged 5 yards a pop. 2 of those runs went for more than 10. So overall, you'd have this beaten down offensive line. You'd think they'd be saying, wow, we did a good job, coach, didn't we? And he goes out there and essentially infers that part of the reason why Chad Kelly isn't playing yet is because the offensive line is so garbage that he doesn't trust them to protect him, and then rips on them after their best game of the season. To me, that's not a way that you are going to win a lot of points in that locker room, specifically with that position group. I thought most of the other comments were fair. That one was off base, and offensive linemen can be fickle. I don't necessarily think they're going to respond well to that.
You probably have a fair point there, JC, but the one thing I do love about Ryan Dinwiddie is when you ask him a question, by and large part, he gives you an honest answer. He doesn't sugarcoat things or give you cliches or not sort of allow you to feel his emotions. He gives it to you raw and real. I'm not saying everybody should be like that, but it's something that I appreciate about Ryan Dinwiddie. Was it warranted? You know, I think so. You're a coach that is coming out of a game where your team surrendered a big lead early in the game and lost to a division rival that you're competing essentially for your playoff lives with. So I get Dinwiddie being frustrated, and I love him showing it on his sleeve, man. It's great for the media. And I think, honestly, the fans for the Double Blue love it as well, because then they understand how much he cares about that football team. There's a bunch of other things to get into with this game, fellas, but I think it's worth noting, JC, you kind of touched on it there, that Dinwiddie talked about, and he was asked by our guy Griff, who's been writing our Toronto Argonauts post-game analysis pieces this season in place of the outstanding Ben Grant. Griff asked him if Chad Kelly's going to be back this season. And Dinwiddie said, I don't want to put him in front of that O-line. So, fellas, you know, based on what we've heard from Dinwiddie all along with regard to Chad Kelly, are we going to see him on the field, or is it too late to put Chad Kelly in a little bit of harm's way with where the Argos are in the standings and record-wise?
Well, and honestly, I don't think that's a huge deal right now. I really don't. Nick Arbuckle, full credit to him. First 2 games, 2 touchdowns, 4 picks. Not a great start to the season, albeit against 2 very good defenses in Montreal and Calgary. Since then, 7 starts, he has thrown 14 touchdowns, only 6 picks. Like, however you slice it, that is good quarterback play, especially because through a lot of those games, as I thought JC correctly assessed, that offensive line was poor. Now, I do think that the offensive line was much, much better this game against the Ottawa Red Blacks. The thing that I really took away from this is that this is not the first time Dinwiddie has done this. He ripped his team publicly after their week 3 loss to the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, a game they lost at BMO Field, 39-32. The team responded well, winning the next week at Ottawa, 28-16. Now, it should be noted the Red Blacks were really banged up at the time, including they did not have Drew Brown under center. They were playing Dustin Crum. So I'm interested to see. This worked the first time, right? And as a head coach, whether it's publicly, whether it's privately, part of your job, right, if you want to use the carrot and stick analogy, part of your job is to give your team the stick every now and again and say, hey, this isn't good enough. That's not good enough. I also will point out, it's not just the players Ryan Dinwiddie is ripping on. He specifically named special teams coordinator Mickey Donovan as someone he was upset with. And he also said, like, we don't have enough dogs. To me, that is, in a way, a potential shot at GM Mike Pinball Clemens and assistant GM John Murphy, saying, hey, if we don't have enough dogs, like, to me, that's the saying. We don't have enough talent. We do not have enough playmakers. We do not have enough guys in this locker room who can get it done. Now, obviously, I'm interpreting that, but I think that's a very fair interpretation of what Ryan Dinwiddie said. So when you're also criticizing not just the guys who are out there, you know, playing hesitant, or one of the things Ryan Dinwiddie said is not playing with enough confidence, he's also picking on his own coaching staff. He's also picking on the people in the personnel department who are picking these players. So I think that there is some value in doing that at times. You have to pick your spots. Obviously, Ryan Dinwiddie was successful in picking his spot the first time he did this back in week 3. I'm interested to see how this team bounces back, because if you whack your team with the stick and they come out flat the next week, like, let's remember, they're in Edmonton next week. Commonwealth Stadium, not the hardest place to play in the CFL. I think that's very clear. The Edmonton Elks, they're a 2-win team, just like Toronto. If you go out and lose next week by, let's say, 15 points, what do you do then? You can't play the carrot. Do you just keep whacking your team with the stick? I don't know what the answer is, but clearly the Argonauts need answers right now because they're a 2-win team. They are 4 points out of a playoff spot if you count the crossover with the BC Lions and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers both being at 4 wins. They've got to get this fixed.
I think you raise a great point about Dinwiddie taking a shot at the personnel department in a way with his comments. And frankly, it's a bit of a deserved shot. And I have a lot of respect for those guys in that front office, but they just didn't get the job done this year. They don't have the horses, as Dinwiddie alluded to, right? They lost a lot of pieces. That's a part of being a Grey Cup champion. You can't avoid that. But you look at the moves that they made through the offseason, and with the exception of maybe bringing in a guy like Andrew Chatfield, who has 6 sacks and has looked impressive at times, not a lot of the proven pieces that they brought in or the trades that they made have worked out in their favor, right? And we saw it in this game in a guy like Daniel Agababoye, who was a staple in Toronto on special teams, a special teams unit that has struggled this year, killing him with a big kickoff return. And he's looked very good in his time in Ottawa. And Toronto hasn't really found much consistency in the backfield either. You think he could have helped with that? Absolutely. I know that there are costs associated with certain players. You're managing the salary cap. You're losing pieces, trying to bring in other ones. It's a complicated endeavor, but they didn't find the right balance this offseason, and they haven't brought in enough youngsters that have flashed yet. They found some. Derek Sluka would be one that comes to mind, but there's still some gaping holes on this team. I think it's going to be a multi-year process to really bring them back up to where they need to be. And to your point, Dunk, maybe you don't play Chad Kelly at all this season because you view it as just a lost year, right? Is it worth the risk if you're a 2-7 football team and there is no chance of a turnaround to A, absorb the cost of his contract and take him off the 6th game, and B, put him in harm's way and potentially have another injury that could cause him to miss next season when hopefully they have more pieces in place? I don't know what the answer is there, but I certainly would be as tentative as Dinwiddie has been this season to risk a piece of that magnitude.
The point about the personnel moves has to be looked at even deeper, fellas. We didn't even talk about the biggest one. Cameron Judge has been pretty good, let's say. But there are people in the league that will tell you that the Argos traded away the best pass rusher in Flo or Mladé, perhaps the best all-round defensive end in the Canadian Football League, to the Calgary Stampeders, who happily took him back, and he has helped that front four become dominant. Yes, Jalen Hutchings has been really good, but part of the reason for that is because of the attention that Ormalade commands. And I'll add another one to the mix, fellas, that's new, and I don't know if many people know about it. If you were the Toronto Argonauts right now, you know, it's easy to say, could all things have been equal, and if this player was what he is today, it would have been a big help for them. But Davis Alexander was once on the Toronto Argonauts negotiation list. Mm-hmm. Now, There are names that are changed on these lists all the time. It used to be back in the day before Stuart Johnston that there would be trades with negotiation list players that we would not know the name of unless, you know, Three Down Nation reported it or others in the media. But if you're the Toronto Argonauts and you had a Davis Alexander to go to, I'm not saying Nick Arbuckle hasn't been good. I think he's been better than advertised, and Hodge has well documented his recent run here, especially after that slow start. But it's just intriguing to look at when you start to dissect the personnel moves as to why this team is so far down in the standings after winning the Grey Cup. Like, there was a choice made there not to bring back some of the guys on the starting defensive line. You traded one away. Jake Cerezma, it sounds like, wanted to go back to Edmonton. So, you know, I'll forgive the Argos for that one. But some of the other moves that were made really need a magnifying glass put on them to understand why the Argos have fallen so hard so fast.
Well, yeah, and if I'm a member of that Toronto Argonauts locker room, I'm listening to these comments going like, well, Filarin Rimolade is a dog. Jake Cerezna is a dog. Dejon Allen is a dog, right? Like Deshaun Amos is a dog. Royce Metivier is a dog. So if we're saying we don't have enough dogs, maybe we got to stop sending our dogs to the pound where other people can adopt them and have these lives together, get all the puppy love. Because right now, our locker room does not have enough dogs, and the guys we're bringing in are not as good as the guys who have exited. So yes, I appreciate that. I think Dinwiddie's assessment is correct. They need more guys to step up. But I also appreciate that there's probably some very frustrated players in that locker room going, yeah, I agree we don't have enough dogs because he got rid of them.
And let's be clear about that. We had the conversation with a lot of these Argos players at Grey Cup last year, specifically trying to compare them to the Calgary Stampeders and saying, okay, what makes this team different? And they said, well, it's Toronto's willingness to go out there and be aggressive and make moves to acquire these dogs, right? To acquire talent like that. It seems like they reversed course this offseason, and their mission was to ship all these dogs out of town. I don't know how you can come back from that this late in the year when those types of game-changing players just aren't available for you to acquire.
Let's talk about the Ottawa Redblacks, though, for a second, because that win and the comeback took the temperature on Bob Dice's hot seat from scalding to simmering. That win in Toronto gave the Redblacks a chance to at least be in the playoff mix. If they lose that game, which it looked like they were going to, down 22-1 early, then you probably write the season off. I know it's early. We're not even at Labor Day, and the stupid old saying goes, the season doesn't start on Labor Day, but your season can be over before Labor Day, okay? That was massive. If this team can keep Drew Brown healthy, or if Drew Brown can help keep himself healthy, the Redblacks can legitimately be in the mix here. I think the real key for this team in the comeback was the mix and the balance on offense. There were, I believe, what, William Stanback had 17 carries, if I'm not mistaken, in that football game. This is something that we have talked about and harped on the podcast. Santino Filoso, our Red Blacks dude, has wanted to see this balance on offense, and it actually happened. And I think that helped the comeback because Drew Brown doesn't have to sit back there, whether it's a five-pack receivers or a six-pack, knowing that the defense is just pinning their ears back, coming after him and seeing different kind of pressure looks and coverage looks and all the rest, that he can actually hand it off to William Stanback and be put in some favorable second down situations and just have like a little bit of relief. It's vital for a quarterback to have that, especially when you're a struggling offense. I thought that was a real key in the comeback. So if Drew Brown can stay healthy and they stay even a little bit more balanced on offense than they have to start the season, that there's a chance here for Ottawa.
Edmonton got their second win of the season in comeback fashion over the Montreal Alouettes. Cody Fajardo threw for 289 yards and two touchdowns in the win, including a late-game winner to Kayon Julian Grant. Did the performance give you hope that the Double E can still turn their season around?
It's hard, man, because you look at the standings and how the Elks, or the double E, I guess we should call them, are going to have to battle with these teams in the West. It seems like there's a real legitimate possibility for a crossover. That's a discussion for down the road, though. But I think there's at least some hope here with Edmonton because of what Cody Fajardo has done since being anointed as the starting quarterback there by Mark Killam, in a move that some people question when it happened, but was ultimately, all due respect to Trey Ford, the right one. You look at it. They go into Saskatchewan when that move was made, play the Riders really tight. The next week, they take the Hamilton Tiger Cats to the wire. If there's a pass that's caught at the end of the game, perhaps that's a victory for Edmonton. And Cody Fajardo was sick of hearing that they were close. He said that was for losers, that they need to come out and win the game. Does that in Montreal, a big F you to Jason Moss and Danny Machocha, maybe not Jason Moss, more so Danny Machocha, who shipped him out of town, and the Alouettes having decided to go with Davis Alexander. So I guess Jason Moss probably was a major part of that decision. I should put him in there. And getting the win. Like, unbelievable. Cody Fajardo has played really good football since becoming the starter with Edmonton. And I think that gives them at least a fighting chance to be in the mix down the stretch.
I'm still skeptical on the Elks. I really liked what I saw earlier this season, right? I watched them live back in week 4, late July and late June in Winnipeg. I liked what I was seeing. They were treading in the right direction. And then that BC game in week 6 was one of the worst performances I maybe have ever seen from any CFL team ever. I like the change to Cody Fajardo. I like that just simply by being on the field a little bit more, right, he's helped take some pressure off of that defense. That said, there are too many holes in this team right now still, I think, to give them much of a chance of making the playoffs. I'm not saying it's impossible, but when you look at how the deck is stacked, we just talked about the Argonauts. Well, the Argonauts, they're only 6 points out of a playoff spot. Yeah, they've lost the season series to the Montreal Alouettes, but they can only, like, they only have to catch 3 teams, right? They need to catch Ottawa. They're only 2 points back. And then they need to catch Winnipeg. They need to catch BC. And given the fact that Toronto's in the East Division, they automatically get the tiebreaker against both of those teams. Edmonton, it's a lot tougher, right? You got to catch BC, a team you've already lost the season series to, or you've got to catch Winnipeg, a team that, yeah, okay, the season series is still up for grabs, but a team that's only played 8 games, mind you, Edmonton's only played 8 games. Edmonton, in order to get the season series against Winnipeg, would have to win their final meeting by more than 13 points. That's a tough ask. I'm just skeptical, is the point. I'm highly skeptical of this Edmonton Elks team. Looking at their schedule, they've got Calgary 3 times. I don't think anybody wants to play the Calgary Stampeders 3 times through the rest of this year with Vernon Adams Jr. under center. They have been close to unbeatable. They've been exceptional. The good news for them, they've got 3 of their next 5 against Toronto and Ottawa. If they can sweep those games, get to 5 wins, assuming that they're going to lose the back-to-back against Calgary, I'm not saying they will, but let's just say that as a hypothetical right now, that gets them to 5 wins. Right? And that gets them to 8 losses. At 5-8, we could start having this conversation. Right now, I think this is a feel-good win. I think it's great, you know, to get a little short-term bump, you know, get some good ink at Edmonton, where that team desperately needs it to try to fill Commonwealth Stadium again. But for me, no. This win was just a one-off feel-good story. This is not a sign of things to come. But I would be happy to be proven wrong, because the fans at Edmonton who are still showing up deserve a winner.
I completely agree with you, Hodge. When I look at the Edmonton Elks, I still don't see a playoff team. I still don't see the team that we saw on paper in the offseason with all the moves they brought in, which, quite frankly, is shocking with the amount of talent that they did acquire, right? We weren't overselling it in free agency with all the signings that they made. Like, these are good players, but schematically, they haven't performed. They haven't found their mojo on defense quite yet. The pass rush isn't there, despite having essentially a ready-made all-star defensive line. I don't know how you fix that at this stage of the season. It's gotten a little bit better the last few weeks, but there's still too many flaws. The one thing that's going right for this team right now, I think, is the change to Cody Fajardo. And I think the difference between Trey Ford and Fajardo is Ford gave you hope, Fajardo gives you belief. when you had Trey Ford in at quarterback, you were always sitting there on the sideline going, well, I hope he turns it on in the second half. Well, I hope he turns it on in the fourth quarter and can execute in that way and create fantastic plays and we can have that miracle comeback. Now, when you've got Cody Fajardo trotting out there in the final minutes with the game on the line, you're saying, okay, I believe we can go and do this because he's done it in the biggest moments before. And I know Cody Fajardo has flaws. I've certainly criticized him as a quarterback, but he's a gamer, right? And he's a winner. And he's proven that he's tough and resilient, and he's going to show up at the end of games and keep swinging. And that's what this team needs. Not necessarily a guy who could maybe pop off, but a guy who, no matter how bad it gets, you're going to get the same toughness, resiliency, and effort at the end of a football game.
That's very well put, JC. And I guess we shouldn't forget that without an awful pass attempt, I'm not even going to call it a throw, by McLeod Bethel Thompson, Edmonton perhaps doesn't even win the football game.
Well, that was
all credit
unforced,
to Cody Fajardo, though.
Right? I don't want to criticize the Elks too much here, but yeah, like their big game-changing defensive play was like not a result of like an exotic blitz forcing a quarterback into a bad throw and then a deceptive coverage on the back end. Somebody makes a crazy diving interception. It was literally just, McLeod Bethel Thompson, maybe by fault of the receiver, we don't know the play call, is literally throwing the ball to nobody. And Tyrell Ford is just kind of in the area code. So great play by Tyrell Ford. I love that he flashed the peace sign before he even made it to midfield. That was amazing. But like, I'm sorry, I'm not watching that play going, wow, this is an incredible example of film work, of execution, and this is the type of repeatable game-breaking play that we can come to expect from the Edmonton Elks. That was me going, wow, the Elks really got a gift there from MBT, and there's a reason. We'll talk about it more later in the show. He's not going to be their starting quarterback anymore.
The Winnipeg Blue Bombers and BC Lions are tied for third and the final playoff spot in the West Division, with four wins apiece. Though the Bombers have the season series and a game in hand, which team do you think is playing better football?
Right now, if I had to pick the third seed in the West Division, I'm picking the BC Lions. Nathan Rourke is kind of a trump card. I know.
I think he's a Bombers homer, Hodge. You know, I'm sick of people saying that about all of us. Like, get off your damn couch. Put down your phone, go outside, breathe some air, and understand that we call it how we see it. Like, people think Hodge is a Bombers homer. He's out here, like, lambasting the team in his post-game analysis column. Same for J.C. Abbott. We talked about him giving it to Aiden Eberhardt. He's given it to Vernon Adams Jr. before. Some people out here, like, thinking that I work for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Go do your homework, brah. It's Harvard Media, 620 CKRM. It's the team that owns the Riders radio broadcast work. I'm sick of it. Rant done. Sorry, Hodge.
And do you have a clause in your contract, Dunk, that allows you to say literally whatever you want to say? Is that a thing?
Yes. There is a line in my contract that says the host will not be, quote, a homer, close quote. So get that garbage out of here.
Well, and I will say every single time I write basically anything about the Bombers, I get mentions back for people saying that I hate the Bombers and that I'm soft on the Bombers. So I figure as long as they're coming in on both sides that I'm doing my job. But Nathan Rourke, I think to me, like he had the terrible interception, right, in that late game against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Julian Hauser drops Nathan Rourke, thinks there's a window where there is very much not a window. And I love that he was able to bounce back. Yeah, they got a bit of a break with the Tim White fumble in overtime. But it doesn't change the fact that Nathan Rourke went into Hamilton. That is a long road trip. Played the hottest team in the CFL and got it done. And James Butler, I think, is having a Brady Oliveira-esque season. He's been incredible for them. To be quite frank, I didn't expect James Butler to have that type of season. I thought he would be good in BC. I did not ever think we'd be in a world where the best player at that running back position all through the year thus far would be James Butler. But we are currently in the midst of doing our midseason all-stars for Three Down Nation. James Butler, Boom, got my vote. Big bounce back year for Keon Hatcher. He is stepping up. Justin McInnes, Javon Kotoy, we already talked about. Aiden Eberhart having, I wouldn't call it a breakout year, but certainly playing respectable football as a fourth option for them. The offensive line still gives me some pause. The defensive line has been a bit of a disappointment. I expected more from Siona Tehema and Matthew Betts coming off the edges. But the secondary has been very good. And Micah Awe is so good at being that sponge that just kind of absorbs all tackles. Obviously, there are times where you'd like to see some of those 8-yard runs become 3-yard runs, but you can't question that. And then Seven McGee finally did something on special teams as the returner, right? That's been such a nothing spot for that team for so long. I'm not selling the Winnipeg Blue Bombers entirely. Let's remember they were 2-6 at this same point of the season last year. But I watched the coach's tape, not the broadcast tape. I watched the coach's tape of all of their offensive snaps from the second half of that Calgary game. And I saw receivers running into each other on 2nd and 14. I saw Zach Kolaris look a little bit of gun-shy when there were some windows to potentially take advantage of in that Calgary defense. I saw the protection breaking down on the edges from the tackles, Kendall Randolph and Stanley Bryant. And I thought I saw some, frankly, questionable play designs. And I will not purport myself to be an expert on X's and O's. I am very much learning in that regard. But there were times where Zach Kolaris, like, there are 7 rushers. Winnipeg has 6 in to protect. And there is not a hot route that I can see that develops quickly enough for Zach Kolaris to get rid of the football to any of his 5 targets. So defensively, I like what the Bombers are doing, at least the trajectory that they're on after they shook up their secondary. On offense, this team is not doing nearly enough. They were horrible in that second half. They had so many opportunities to put the game away. They did not get it done. So I still think the Bombers are a playoff team. They could be that crossover team potentially. But right now, the team that I think has the only shot really to contest Saskatchewan and Calgary for 1-2 in the West is the Lions.
I agree with you, Hodge. Both of these teams are playoff teams. Somebody's going to get the crossover spot. But right now, as it stands, despite the fact that the Bombers beat the brakes off the Lions and have that season series, I would take the Lions by a hair. I'm not quite as harsh on the Bombers as you are. Part of that is because I have some skepticism about the Lions in terms of their consistency. Defensively, this was a tremendous performance from Mike Benavides' group against Hamilton. They took all the lessons that they learned the hard way in the first game. They applied them over the bye week, and they came out, shut them down in the first half, had a bit of a slip up in the third quarter, but then held firm in the fourth, holding that team to field goals, and came up clutch in overtime. I thought schematically it was much better. I thought he moved pieces around into spots they were more comfortable in. I thought the pass rush was a little bit more improved because they were able to bring some more pressure, which they didn't do the week before. And that's really positive going forward. But we've seen this sort of trend with the BC Lions over the course of the season. They have a week like they did against Edmonton where it's like, wow, this is the best defense in the CFL. The offense isn't getting anything against them. They're making crazy plays and they're racking up tackles and they're stopping the run. And then the next week you'll go against an opponent like Winnipeg with a backup quarterback and a backup running back. And all of a sudden, that backup running back's running for over 100 yards. And Chris Streveler looks like he's a world beater at the quarterback position. And you're like, okay, what's happening here? That's been their trend all season long, is one bad game, one good game. I think I need to see a few in a row before I'm truly a believer in this defensive unit. But as you mentioned, Nathan Rourke can do just about whatever he likes on offense, and he's going to make plays. And I think sometimes that's to his detriment because he is making some risks that are uncalled for. I thought there were some times in that game where he put the football at risk in a way that he didn't need to, but ultimately, he put up 400 yards, he made plays, he drove them at the end of the game, and he's a trump card in those situations because of his escapability and his accuracy and his arm strength.
JC out here like, Toronto, pop, pop, you done this season. Ottawa, pop, pop, you done. There's going to be a crossover. Mark it down, okay? JC called it in August 11th. He's saying the crossover is done and dusted.
If anyone wants to find a way to use that as bulletin board material and call me an idiot, for the record, I picked Ottawa and Edmonton to be in the Grey Cup this year. So my predictions, not always sound, gentlemen.
My man eating all the crow. Appreciate you, dude. Let's give a little bit of credit to Ryan Rigmaiden here on one area he wanted to improve on, and that was the physicality on both lines, but specifically the offensive line, because James Butler is leading the Canadian Football League in rushing. As for Nathan Rourke, fellas, he is, some people hate this in the CFL, but I don't care, the MVP in 2025 in the Canadian Football League. He is undoubtedly the most valuable player to his team. There is a vast difference to this BC Lions team with Nathan Rourke on the field and mostly healthy and with Nathan Rourke on the sideline. I think we can all agree with that. That is the key here for the BC Lions. If they're going to go ahead and compete in this rough and tumble West Division, or perhaps go the way of the crossover that JC Abbott is so sure about. Like JC, this kid threw for 400, threw for 400 yards. And you're picking this game apart. He goes on the road against the hottest team, the Canadian Football League. And you're like, Nathan, can you stop doing some of this dancing around outside of the pocket stuff? What do you want from this guy, JC?
Hey, he put the ball at risk. And I think Nathan himself is as
what
critical as
What plays did he put the ball at risk on?
Well, there was one where he stepped up into the pocket and escaped one tackle and then blindly threw it out to James Butler, which, to his credit, worked in the past a couple games back, but this time did not work and very nearly cost the team a fumble. There was a number of opportunities. Oh, who dropped a would-be pick? Like, there are times when he is under pressure and he's got defenders hanging on to him, and rather than just eat a sack and say, live another day, he's throwing the ball wildly. And I don't think those are smart decisions. Sometimes it works out for him. We've seen how good that could look in NFL preseason, right? Where they're still playing that highlight and he's not even in that league. But at the same time...
That was weird.
Yeah. At the same time... You just can't do that. Like, those interceptions are going to hurt you if they happen. And I thought he got lucky on a couple of plays in that game. The yardage numbers are great, but I needed a little bit more efficiency from him.
That's fair. 12 touchdowns, 5 interceptions so far this season. I think Nathan Rourke would probably, at least on the record, agree with you, JC. But again, I think it needs to be reiterated. This guy's the MVP. Perhaps we should add MVP as a legitimate award. Like, I'm just saying, because MOP is different. That's Bo Levi Mitchell at the moment, with I think Trevor Harris nipping at his heels, or at least in the discussion with a big time matchup between those two teams going on in week 11 at Mosaic Stadium. But Nathan Rourke, to me, is the MVP.
I think you're forgetting what the Calgary Stampeders looked like without Vernon Adams Jr., but I don't entirely
with
disagree
with the Montreal Alouettes without Davis Alexander. I think that's your other argument.
Yes. This is why it's a great discussion point, fellas. Stu Justin, let's have a CFL MVP along with an MOP.
I don't think most people are smart enough to have that discussion. They don't like nuancing awards voting.
True. I also want two awards. One of them is the comeback player of the year, and the other is the washed player of the year. They're opposite
Whoa,
awards.
Bro.
It's like an award
Only one
and
of
a
those
Razzie.
Is realistic.
I'm well aware. I'm blue skying right now. I want the comeback player of the year and the washed player. And if you win washed, then the next year you're automatically on the short list for comeback player.
Or who's your washed player in 2025 midseason?
I'm not saying that on the podcast.
Come on, bro.
But there
you can't
are,
say you want an award and then you're not going to give a name or people who are candidates for the award.
Hey, maybe
I will
be like people.
MVP, Nathan Rourke's the MVP.
I think VA is the MVP. I think that there are multiple people listening to this podcast who, based on the quarterback play of a couple of teams when their starters have been out, can maybe speculate for themselves who some candidates for the washed player of the year would be. And obviously,
does one play
no,
for Montreal.
I'm not suggesting that
does the other
award
play for BC
will ever exist. I am just saying it would be amazing if on awards night there was a washed player of the year award, because some guys would probably go up and they would.
Who would even accept that award?
Well, Sandra Bullock got the Razzie and wasn't accepted at the same year she won the Oscar.
Some guys would protest. They wouldn't even show up to awards. Like, they'd be so offended. Other guys would show up in a tux, and they would proudly accept it and give a speech. And that would be amazing. I'm just saying. Also, before we go on, we have to acknowledge Sergio Castillo kicking a 63-freaking-yard field goal. That was unbelievable, tying an all-time CFL record. I ran the numbers. In CFL history, dating back to when dinosaurs roamed the earth, there have only been 5 field goals of 60-plus yards ever made. Sergio Castillo kicked 3 of them. That is insane. So while we're talking about year-end awards, Sergio Castillo has moved to the front of the line for me as special teams player of the year. He has been brilliant. I understand, yeah, there have been some great returners, all that stuff. But right now, for me, it's Serge. Head coach Jason Moss indicated to the local media Caleb Evans will start in week 11 when the Alouettes visit BC after another poor performance from McLeod Bethel Thompson. How surprised have you been by MBT's struggles?
I've been very surprised by the depth of the struggles. I didn't necessarily think he'd come in and be a world beater, but I thought MBT was a lot better than people gave him credit for last year in Edmonton. And he hasn't looked like that at all in Montreal. He has looked like a player who is struggling to do even the basic things that a quarterback needs to do to win. He does not look comfortable in that system. He is not seeing the field well. I mean, we already talked about it, but that pick 6 to Tyrell Ford at the end of the first half that got him benched, if that's not on the receiver, I don't know that you bench the quarterback. So to me, that's an indication that maybe it was more on the QB, but an indefensible throw in that circumstance. And there have been a lot of them this season. MBT is great for the CFL. He's a great talking point. He's a guy who isn't afraid to speak his mind. I'll be sorry to see him go when his time is up, but I don't know how much longer he's going to be viable as a CFL quarterback if he plays the way that he has played the last few weeks.
McLeod Bethel Thompson came into 2025 as the highest paid backup quarterback in the Canadian Football League, $185,000 in hard money, and then he gets an additional $4,000 every game he plays 51% or more of the offensive snaps. I don't know if he would get that $4,000 because of what happened last game when he was put on the bench. We'd have to track the snaps, fellas, to know. And then Caleb Evans came into that game. But he has struggled much more than I think a lot of people thought. I think there were a lot of people, especially in Montreal, that thought, okay, yeah, like, we're getting rid of Cody Fajardo because of the optics here and how awkward it could be with Davis Alexander as the starter. But I think there were some people quietly in Montreal that thought, oh, we're actually getting the better quarterback, which definitely was not the case in that game at Percival Molson Stadium, and I don't think is going to be the case for the long haul here. All due respect, JC said it well. McLeod Bethel Thompson is a great advocate for the Canadian Football League. He has voiced his displeasure in, I think, a very detailed way, for lack of a better term, in the past with Randy Ambrosi. You know, but from what I understand, there might be a little bit of him feeling some type of way about our coverage at 3downnation.com, but we attack covering the Canadian Football League in a similar way to how he attacks playing his position in the CFL. And we respect him, but Hodge is out here calling him his washed player of the year. So Hodge,
I did not say that.
Yes, you did.
I did not say that. You're putting words in my mouth. I inferred that there are multiple backups who have played poorly this year, which is an accurate statement. I did not say McLeod Bethel Thompson is the all-wash player of the year. What I will say is I am very surprised. What? Trevor Harris
you
is all-washed?
You said earlier in the year that Trevor Harris was washed.
I did not say that. No, I did not say that at all, publicly
yes,
or privately.
I said there was, in the group chat,
one throw where he tried to sling it through a window, and I said, I don't think he has the arm strength to rip it through that window the same way that Nathan Rourke or Chad Kelly can. And I still believe that's an accurate statement. That also does not mean that he's washed, considering how well he is playing. Absolutely, he has played very well. I think you're trying to put words into my mouth.
You're walking that doggy back.
Because you're a Ryder Homer. You're trying to put words into my mouth. That's why.
It says he's breaking his contract, bro.
Breaking the contract. No, McLeod Bethel Thompson. Well, let's start with this. Jason Moss, since he became a CFL offensive coordinator, even before that as a quarterback's coach, has done a great job coaching guys up at the position that he played for a very long time in the CFL and did so at a very respectable level. No, Jason Moss will never be in the Hall of Fame as a quarterback, but he still had a long career for good reason, and that's because he was an excellent backup and could be a successful starter for stretches with different teams. And Michael Riley, I went and ran the numbers before the show, in Edmonton when Jason Moss became the head coach in 2016, had never before had a 5,000-yard season or a 25-passing touchdown season. He did those things 3 years in a row under Jason Moss, 16, 17, 18, boom, boom, boom. Jason Moss comes to Montreal, takes Cody Fajardo off the scrap heap. They were together in Saskatchewan, didn't look like a great mix together in Ryderville. All of a sudden, boom, they win a Grey Cup together in 2023, and they have Cody Fajardo playing at a high level in 2024. Yeah, Davis Alexander got the starting job, but that is because Cody Fajardo was hurt and fighting through a nagging hamstring injury for a bunch of that year. So when McLeod Bethel Thompson rolls over from Edmonton, I'm going, okay, this is a guy who's had multiple 4,000-yard seasons in the CFL just last year. Yeah, the Edmonton Elks were not a great team, but this is still a guy who threw for 24 touchdowns and 11 picks with the Elks last year. Surely he's going to be able to put up similar numbers in Montreal with a better coaching staff, arguably, a better team around him, potentially. And that has not at all happened. Like, this combination of him and Jason Moss not only has not gelled as I expected it to, but it seems to have done the opposite of that. It is completely broken. And that is why I think this team has made the right decision to start Caleb Evans. I said on the show last week, I don't understand why some of these backups have such long leashes. And I think that McLeod Bethel Thompson should have got the poll earlier. I'm not saying you bench him for life. That's the beauty of this type of decision. If you pull a guy early, you can always play him again late. If you pull him in week 8, you can play him in week 9. It's not a permanent decision. You're doing what you need to do to try to win that individual game. McLeod Bethel Thompson did not put his team in a position to win that game. Had they started Caleb Evans, it's possible they win. And guess what? If Caleb Evans goes out and you know what's the bed, you can go to the next guy in James Morgan, who everybody seemed really, really high on in training camp in Montreal. So I'm not surprised McLeod Bethel Thompson got benched. If anything, this should have happened earlier, but I am genuinely surprised. I thought McLeod Bethel Thompson would be the top backup in the league. And not only has he not been that, he has not put that team in a position to be successful. He's 0-4 as a starter this season. And it is wild the difference in that team between him being on the field or McLeod Bethel Thompson. Scratch that. Sorry. Bethel Thompson is 1-4 as a starter. He was the starter for that game where they beat the Calgary Stampeders, albeit VA getting hurt late. But he does have a win. I won't take that away from him.
I completely agree with you, Hodge. I think CFL teams are sometimes even too loyal to their starters when they're struggling, let alone their backups, who teams continue to roll with after multiple subpar starts. And in a situation like Montreal's, with the depth that they have in that quarterback room, which I think might be arguably the deepest in the CFL when you go 1-4, why don't you move on to a guy like Caleb Evans? And I'm excited to see what he brings to the table this week. I know Evans has had his shots before and it hasn't always worked out. But again, he looked fantastic in preseason this year, as he often does. And let's not forget that he's only 27. Caleb Evans is still the same age as Trey Ford. Actually, he's younger than Trey Ford. And we talk all the time about you don't want to throw out, you know, Trey Ford's potential because he's so young and still learning. Or we talk about a guy like Nathan Rourke, who's also 27 and he's still young in his career, or Davis Alexander, who's 26 and he's got to have a long leash so he can learn and develop. Caleb Evans is still a young quarterback, and there's a reason he's stuck around in the CFL. It's because he flashes at times. I still think there's potential there. I'm excited to see what he can do with this latest opportunity, and I will not be shocked if he plays significantly better than what we've seen from MBT the last few weeks.
Let's just remember, fellas, MBT has been without Tyson Philpott and Austin Mack for at least a couple of these starts, if not more. Those are major weapons in this offense. I'm not excusing that awful pass attempt, I think it should be called, that was caught by Tyrell Ford and some of the other bad throws that he's made. But it hasn't been this Alouettes offense at full health. I think that could have potentially looked a little different.
I'll get you those numbers right now. So Austin Mack started the only game he started was the game that Bethel Thompson won against Calgary. He's missed the other four starts. Phil Pott started the first two Bethel Thompson starts. He's been out for the last three. So I it's a fair point. The unit that Montreal dressed in their receiving core this past week was Charleston Rambo, Tyler Snead, Regis Cebisu, Alexander Hollins, and Hakeem Harris. That's not a group of world beaters. I'm not saying there's no playmakers there, but yeah, it's not a star-studded group. It's a fair point. But when you're putting up 22 points against what has been statistically consistently the worst defense in the CFL, you frankly just need to do better than that. You need to, and they have it.
Canadian University quarterback Taylor Elgersma saw his first preseason action with the Green Bay Packers on Saturday, completing 3 of 4 passes for 24 yards in less than 3 minutes of action. What's your assessment of his chances to make the roster?
53-man active roster, probably not likely, but I think there's a good chance he could make the practice squad. That's based on a number of things. First of all, Packers didn't draft Taylor Elgersma, Kevin Harlan. Man, like, just please get this stuff right. I got a lot of respect for you. But when Elgersma came in the game, fellas, on the broadcast, his partner there in the booth was giving Kevin Harlan all his props for all the data he had gathered on Taylor Elgersma. And some of it was just factually wrong, including the graphic. The way they spell Canadian was not wrong. And then Kevin Harlan proceeded to go on and say that, oh, Taylor Elgersma is trying to become one of the few, if ever, any player from Canadian University has made it in the NFL. It's like, bro, hello, Israel Adonijay. Like, hello, there are two Canadian University offensive linemen. One was drafted, and Gio Manu was with Detroit. Theo Benedet has been taking starter reps with the Chicago Bears. Like, that's only just to name a couple. What about David Onyemata, who's carved out a long career in the National Football League? Akeem Hicks, like, we go down this list. Like, can you just pay Canada a little bit of respect here from a football standpoint, especially after the Canadians whooped your butts on the flag football field, okay? I got so much respect for Kevin Harlan. He is the elite of the elite when it comes to play-by-play. But when your partner in the booth is giving you props for all this information that he thinks is right and that your audience thinks it's right because of the credibility that you have built up, and it's just factually wrong, it's disrespectful, okay? The facts are this. Taylor Elgersma is the first Canadian quarterback since the 1980s to take a snap in a preseason game. And Kevin, you would be factually correct if you said that Taylor Elgersma is trying to become one of the few Canadian University quarterbacks to make an NFL team. We know that words matter in broadcasting. We talk about it all the time in terms of what we write and on the podcast with Three Down Nation. Like, just get your facts straight, man. Google Three Down Nation NFL draft. Like, it's right there for you. We literally have all of the Canadians who've been drafted from both sides of the border because we respect how the Americans play football up here too, okay? Rant over. Let's get to Taylor Elgersma, who looked very comfortable. He came to the game for the last series, completed a fourth down pass, with some zip to Will Shepard as the game expired. There seems to be a good chance for him to get lots of playing time this coming Saturday against the Indianapolis Colts. Matt LaFleur has said that Jordan Love's not going to play in that game. There's a chance that Love could play in the third and final preseason game at Lambeau Field. So we'll see how that week plays out. But I thought Elgersma looked very comfortable. And it's worth noting, he had the best completion percentage among all Green Bay Packers quarterbacks on the night, including Sean Clifford, who he's competing with for that third string role. And people can't just say, well, Taylor Elgersma trying to catch on the practice squad as a fourth guy. Like, you're competing in the NFL every single day. I thought he looked better than Clifford. I thought he looked very much like he fit in. It didn't seem like the game was too fast for him. Now, the other part of this is he's playing at the end of the fourth quarter, right? So he's going against some of the other back-end roster guys for the New York Jets. So I get that part of it. But I think there are a lot of positives here for Taylor Elgersma to build on. Matt LaFleur said going into the game that Elgersma has flashed in limited reps during training camp. I think that's a positive. And it is rare, Kevin Harlan, that an NFL head coach would talk glowingly about a Canadian University quarterback. So lots going Taylor Elgersma's way. It is still early in training camp in the preseason, so he needs to continue. And LaFleur said it, and I think it makes a lot of sense, that he needs to be consistent, even if he's getting limited reps. But I really think this preseason game in Indy against the Colts, you could see a lot of Elgersma, and that's going to go a long way towards answering the question that you laid out, JC, as to whether he'll make the active roster, which I think is probably unlikely at this point, but whether he can secure a spot on that practice roster.
I think that Canadian quarterback Tyler Elgersma is in tough to make anything in the NFL, and that's not a shot at him or even an assessment of him as an individual. It's just a systemic thing. By definition, the NFL does not respect what you really do in the CFL. We've heard Canadian Football League players say that. They're certainly not going to respect what he did at the U Sports level, right? So he is going to have to not be as good as the guy he's competing against. And he's not even just having to be a little better than the guy he's competing against. He has to blow everybody else out of the water, because any personnel man worth their salt, or I should say woman, personnel person worth their salt in the NFL, right? If you keep Sean Clifford over Elgersma, no one will ever criticize that choice. If you keep Elgersma over Clifford and Elgersma doesn't light it up, right, people are going to get all over you. Like, why would you cut this veteran who's been around and knows the NFL and, you know, played at, I think Clifford played at Oregon State, right? Like, he played at a relatively high level, you know, D1 program. Like, why are you getting rid of this guy for this random Canadian who was never going to be anything? You can make an entire career off finding a Taylor Elgersma if he goes and becomes the next Tom Brady, but 99 times out of 100, personnel people will go the safe conservative route because that is the best way to getting their next contract. And that is just how life works. That is business. And I'm not going to shame anybody for trying to get their next contract. So it's always will have been a uphill battle for Taylor Elgersma, but I wish him the best. He got into that game. He completed 4 out of 5 passes. I watched the highlights that were posted on socials, and I agree. I thought he looked good. He was slinging that football through those tight windows, as you have to do in the NFL. So, good first start. It's still a big uphill battle.
3 out of 4 passes, Hodge. Get
3 out of 4.
Facts right.
Okay, fair. Fair.
It's important in broadcasting. Come on now.
That's true. Well, I'm not broadcasting, but I get your point.
Well, you're broadcasting your way. This is a broadcast.
We're not live, so I don't think this is a broadcast, but I get what you're saying.
It is cast broadly. It's a podcast, which has a broad audience. That's a broadcast in a certain way. No, I think Taylor Elgersma has a shot at the practice roster just because of the quarterback position. Like, there's only 4 guys there. If Green Bay decides to carry 3, which they've done in the past, it makes sense to have him on PR. My only comment to add about this game is, let the man cook. Like, if you're gonna go for it on 4th and 5 and he's gonna hit a completion and there's 35 45 seconds left in the football game, let him throw another pass, let him try and go for a touchdown. Like, I don't know why you go for it on 4th and 5 if you're not gonna let him run another play. I know it's a meaningless preseason game, you don't want to risk injury and stuff, but I don't like the fact that they sent him out there. He did everything they asked. He made a great play in a clutch moment, and they said, yeah, seeing enough, don't need anything more. Let the guy do everything he can to prove he deserves to be on a roster. I don't think the Green Bay Packers gave him that opportunity in this game.
Let's just educate Mr. Harlan a little more, okay? 3 straight years in the NFL draft, 2024, 2023, and 2022, players have been selected who were once at a Canadian university, Isaiah Adams, third round Arizona Cardinals, 2024. Tavius Robinson, defensive lineman, fourth round Baltimore Ravens, 2023. 2022, Dean Leonard, seventh round Los Angeles Chargers. All of these guys are playing still.
You forgot Gio Manu.
In the National Football League. Sorry, yes, what am I doing? God, I'm pulling the Kevin Harlan. Gio Manu, I talked about him earlier. But anyways, three straight years, guys with U Sports backgrounds. And for the uninitiated, Dean Leonard started his collegiate career at the University of Calgary. Tavius Robinson started his collegiate career at the University of Guelph. Isaiah Adams started his collegiate career at Wilfrid Laurier University. You go back through the years here, fellas. Like, I just don't understand how you can think that you're prepped up when you're just so far off base, okay? David Onyemata selected fourth round, 2016. Like, how far back do we need to go here? Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, sixth round, 2014 with the Kansas City Chiefs, won a Super Bowl, for Christ's sakes. Like, on and on down the list. Vaughn Martin, 2009, fourth round, San Diego Chargers. I played against that dude when I was at Guelph. I know somebody's out there counting how many times I dropped the University of Guelph, so I'll do it a few more times so we can have a few more drinks. Like, I just would like the respect, because there has never been, as we know, fellas, more Canadians coming from schools on both sides of the border, Canada and the U.S., getting selected or getting opportunities in the NFL. Just give us that respect, okay? And whoever the graphics person was, Canadian.
The one thing I will add, just to rebut JC a little bit. Yes, it's true. They have four quarterbacks, the Packers. And yes, I could very well see them having a quarterback on PR. But all it takes is somebody else cutting a quarterback who they have graded an inch better than Taylor. And that's the quarterback they'll add to their PR. So
that's,
I'm not
fair,
saying.
Hodge. That's fair. But if you're going to do that, you're doing it with a player that hasn't been in the offense through the entire offseason.
Yeah, so Elgersma has a bit of a leg up there. I'm not suggesting he doesn't, but it's not as simple as you're competing against these three guys, and if you beat them, you're on the team, whether it's active or PR. That's not the case. There's dozens of quarterbacks who are about to become available, and we've seen it happen many, many, many times that a guy who flashes in camp or flashes in preseason, you know, it's like, oh, wow, this guy's going to make it. And even they might even be on the PR day one. And then day two, they go, oh, well, actually, this guy cleared waivers from another team. And yeah, we like them a little bit more at Mike, or we like them a little bit more at left tackle or whatever it is. So I'm not being a hater. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just trying to be a realist. It is an uphill battle. He's not just competing against three vets. He's competing against a world of talent, almost all of which, in the eyes of NFL personnel people, comes from a higher stock of player, a higher caliber of player, a higher level of football. So that is the reason why Taylor Elgersma, I think, is in tough to make it. I'm not saying he won't. I'm rooting for him, just as I think all of Canada is. But I'm trying to be realistic.
It's fair, Hodge. The numbers against him in the past are definitely there, but he's unique. And I think the time invested by the Packers, you know, going back to the pre-draft, top 30 visit, right? The interest to bring him in for rookie minicamp and go through the process to sign him and make sure all his paperwork and permits were correct. Plus having him there for OTAs. Like, I think that shows a lot here. The Packers don't just do this. And as JC noted, they usually just carry three quarterbacks. So I think they see something in Taylor Elgersma. And it's worth noting, you know, on the other side, Hodge, yeah, there's a bunch of other quarterbacks, but there was real legitimate interest from NFL teams drafting Taylor Elgersma. And there were other teams that, if the Packers didn't sign him and Elgersma and his camp really liked the fit in terms of going to Green Bay, that likely would have brought him in and signed him in the offseason too. Like, the next weekend, he declined going to the Buffalo Bills. You would have to think, just by sheer analysis, that the Bills would have been interested in signing Taylor Elgersma. So I think we got to cover all sides here. Is he fighting an uphill battle against the odds? Yes. Does he look better than Sean Clifford? Yes. Have the Packers invested time, and does that bode well for an opportunity for him to make the practice roster? Yes. Could there be a situation where if he goes through the waiver period that another team picks him up? Heck yes. I mean, we're talking about the other quarterbacks that the Packers could bring in and potentially let Elgersma go or the other players. But there's other teams out there grading the film and watching Elgersma. And this guy has shown every step along the way so far since he's left Wilfrid Laurier University. Senior Bowl, looked the part. People raving about him, right? Pro Day. That dude was at home in his kitchen cooking in Buffalo, a place that he had never thrown before. He looked better than the UB quarterback there. Okay? One other note before we go. Kevin Harlan. There has been, if you can believe it, a first-round pick from Canadian University football. Mike Shad, 1986, Queen's University to the Los Angeles Rams. We're here to help you, man. I got a lot of respect for you. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I think it's now time for JC's random neglister, gentlemen. And the, we got a fun one today because the Toronto Argonauts are out here. Ryan Dinwiddie is begging, pleading. He's saying, give me some dogs. And I think I found a dog on their neg list. Defensive back Tamurion Wilson out of Central Arkansas. This is a guy who played safety at 6'1", 227 pounds. They moved him all over the field. They played him high. They played him in the box. Sometimes he even lined up at corner. He's not the most athletic guy in the world. That's why he's not in the NFL right now. Lacks a little fluidity. Only ran a 4.59, but he's got a quick trigger downhill, and he is uber physical, sometimes to his detriment. He had 9 major penalties and a couple of targeting calls in college, but racked up over 278 career tackles, 19 of those on special teams because he'll run down and cover a punt like nobody's business, and had 80-plus PFF grades in each of his last 2 seasons. He'll miss a few tackles here. He'll make some mistakes because of his lack of fluidity, but he's the type of guy who makes a physical impact and changes tone in a game. I think that's something that the Toronto Argonauts could use, especially on their special teams unit right now. And they've got a hole that they recently filled, but I don't think is cemented, at strong side linebacker. I see some flashes of maybe a prime Derek Moncrief in Tamurion Wilson's game. If he doesn't fit there, if he's not fluid enough, I think he's an easy transition to Will and a core special teamer. This is a guy to keep an eye on.
JC out here finding dogs. What say you, Ryan Dinwiddie?
And is Wilson a free agent right now? It looked like
Wilson
he was in camp
is currently a free agent. He had a mini camp invite with the Bills. Yeah.
It's time for Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2019, Jim Hobson was inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame as a builder. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders underwent a period of unprecedented success during Hobson's tenure as president and CEO from 2005 to 2015, posting record profits while capturing 2 Grey Cups. The Regina native played for the team for 4 seasons before entering a 30-year career in education, then joining the Rough Riders front office. Sadly, Hobson passed away in 2024 at the age of 73. Gentlemen, I have one question for you. Since Jim Hobson left the team as president and CEO, how many Grey Cups have the Saskatchewan Rough Riders won?
0.
0?
Bum, 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 bum. 0 is correct. 0 is correct. Jim Hobson, unbelievable winner on and off the field for that team. He is the reason why some people to this day continue putting watermelons on their heads. We love it.
RIP Jim Hobson, and from being on the ground now for a couple seasons at every Riders home game, people still talk about him, his impact on the team, and how he would literally talk to like every fan that wanted to talk Rider football or about the team or share his passion. Like, he was very invested in the role that he had with that organization, and his legacy still lives on. Let's go to the 3-minute drill. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers cut former All-CFL and Canadian punter Jake Julian. Do you expect him back in Edmonton anytime soon?
Well, Julian has cleared NFL waivers, so he's free to sign with any of the other 31 teams down south. I'm guessing he's going to want to wait to see if there are any opportunities before considering a return to Edmonton, especially considering the Elks have Cody Grace now, who's been very good for them. McGill University has revealed a new logo for their athletic teams. Did the school make good on the redesign or miss an opportunity for improvement?
This is a swing and a miss if I've ever seen one. I didn't hate McGill's old logo. It was kind of classic, if a little bit outdated and basic. And they said, let's take this and make it even more basic. It's just a red M, gentlemen. I could have done that redesign, and I could barely use my laptop. Come on. Do better. Do better. Hamilton native Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, who was honored this week at the Tiger Cats game after winning an NBA championship and the league's MVP, said at a press conference that his football position would be quarterback or maybe kicker. It doesn't seem like he likes to get hit. Do you think he could have made it in the CFL as a passer, Dunk?
I don't think so, bro. He would take a hit from Jake Ceresna and be cracked in half. All due respect, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander ain't afraid to take it to the 10, but it's much different when you might get a helmet to your face. Not exactly. You got a face mask on, but you know what
that's
I mean.
A,
when you get a helmet
a,
planted
a
in your chest.
That's a
there
flag.
Are also more sensitive True. Areas to take a helmet. I'll let people speculate as to what I'm talking about.
No, he's a great athlete. I think probably if he wanted to and he was comfortable being hit, could have been a pretty good quarterback, but he's a great basketball player, an absolute superstar from Canada, by the way. Can you imagine that, Kevin Harlan? The Toronto Argonauts recently signed offensive lineman Ryan Skivier and Brandon Kemp. How soon do you think they'll be on the field?
Well, I would have said soon, but the Argonauts offensive line had a really nice bounce back game against Ottawa. So I think it's still possible that Sevier and Kemp get on the field sometime soon, but I think the current O-line in Toronto bought itself at least a little bit of time with that performance. The Calgary Stampeders became the first CFL team to broadcast a game in Cantonese and Mandarin this past week. JC, is that a good way to grow the game?
It's a fantastic way to grow the game. I know the BC Lions have had a lot of success with their Punjabi broadcasts over the last couple of years. I'm a regular halftime visitor to that broadcast booth. I think the more languages you can broadcast the CFL in, the better. This was a big step from Calgary. Canadian receiver Jared Wayne cleared NFL waivers following his release from the Houston Texans. Do you think he'll sign elsewhere?
Pod, you take this one.
Well, I've been told that Wayne could very well rejoin the Texans. He's battling a little bit of a hamstring. Like, this could just be a paper move, but you never know. Wayne, undrafted guy. This is year three. It's a big time for him. If he's going to have a long NFL career, you'd think he has to get back on a roster soon.
Montreal Alouettes have signed veteran defensive backs Siante Evans and Brandon Dandridge. Which player could have a bigger impact for the Birds?
Well, I'm going to say Brandon Dandridge because Siante Evans actually got into the starting lineup this week and looked like he got hurt. So I guess I have to say Dandridge. Like, Alouettes, I don't know what it is with their secondary this year. They have had terrible luck with injuries. The Dallas Cowboys waived former Riders offensive lineman Dakota Shepley with an injury designation. I'm pretty sure he's another one of those U Sports NFLers that never happens. What does that mean for his NFL future?
Well, in the short term, that means he'll either revert to IR or be released with an injury settlement. I'd probably lean towards the latter just based on how few people you can take off of IR during a season and the fact that it was only a high ankle sprain that he suffered, so not a serious long-term injury. But I would not be surprised to see him back in Dallas once he's healthy. This is a guy who stuck around for a couple of years, and he's really tied in with that organization. His wife is business partners with Dak Prescott's wife. So when you've got the quarterback needling the GM to say, hey, let's bring this guy back, that probably bodes well for your future. Brandon Dozier has resurfaced with the Toronto Argonauts following his release from Hamilton this week. Will he be a good fit for them?
I think so. Good veteran guy, versatile, can play multiple positions on the back end, including strong side linebacker. So we'll see where he possibly lines up for the Boatmen. The Argos also cut Canadian receiver Hergi Mayala this past week. Did that move make sense?
It didn't really make sense. Like, yeah, the Argonauts have had, you know, Kevin Mattel having a bit of a breakout year. You know, Dave Unger is very consistent. Dejon Brissett's consistent. I thought, you know, from a depth standpoint, Mayala was kind of the perfect guy. He was a guy who can also play some specials, but maybe I'm missing something. Last one, the University of Montreal Caravan announced the passing of incoming defensive back Joseph Gingras, who was only 21 years of age. We extend our sincerest condolences to the family and friends of Gingras, as well as the entire Caravan's program. On that note, for Justin Dunk and I and JC Abbott, I am John Hodge. We thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. We will join you, JC and I, on Wednesday for our picks for week 11 in the Canadian Football League. We'll see you then.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.